Quit eating your burgers off a coffee table. If you want to eat a burger, put it on a bar. Follow your instincts to B-Dubs for the new All-American Cheeseburger. Fresh, juicy beef smashed till it's crispy around the edges, covered in gooey cheese, and stacked to the ceiling with deliciousness. And knock that baby down with a frosted beer at the bar, just like the sports gods intended. The new All-American Cheeseburger at Buffalo Wild Wings. Roar! Please drink responsibly.
This is a download from BFM 89.9, the business station.
The greatest trick the devil ever pulled was convincing the world he didn't exist.
Open the pod bay doors, Hal.
I'm sorry, Dave. I'm afraid I can't do that.
You want answers!
I want the truth! You can't handle the truth!
You ever dance with the devil in the pale moonlight? What?
Take your stinking paws off me, you damn dirty ape!
At the Movies on BFM 89.9.
Hey guys, I'm Umar Paganampage Pagan. Joining me today to talk Star Wars The Last Jedi, Ian McNally and Bahe Yusuf. Gentlemen, it's that time of year again. It's December, and as December will be for the rest of our known lives, we will have a Star Wars movie to talk about.
I'm okay with that.
I'm okay with that.
For as long as they keep messing up their production schedules, because these are all supposed to be summer blockbusters.
That's true. Yeah.
And, you know, after the sacking of Colin Trevorrow, it looks like they are going to be December movies for the foreseeable future, with the exception of Solo, because they're holding on to that summer release date.
For now. See. They're remaking that entire movie. So.
We'll see.
Star Wars The Last Jedi is now in cinemas. Rian Johnson has taken over writing and directing duties from J.J. Abrams. This is the second movie in the new trilogy. And of course, if you don't already know, it stars Mark Hamill, Carrie Fisher, Daisy Ridley, John Boyega, Adam Driver, Oscar Isaac, and it introduces Kelly Marie Tran as a brand new character, the first Asian-American female lead in Star Wars. She's Vietnamese-American, and she plays a character called Rose Tico. And the movie is about 2 hours and 35 minutes. It's actually an episode and a half, really. And before we get into the review, can I just say, watching this movie just reinforces how much I miss Carrie Fisher as a person. Mm-hmm. Like, I swear to God, I was just tearing up at completely irrelevant scenes just because she was on screen.
Just because she's looking poignant in a window or something.
Right? Majestic.
In every possible way.
And
I think a lot of her comedy came out in this one as well. Like you tend to forget she does comedy quite well.
Oh, she's a great comic writer too.
Yeah. And quite a bit of a few of her scenes have been quite, they're not ha ha funny, but they're just like, oh, that Carrie Fisher.
Let the past die. That's the only way to become what you were meant to be.
Darkness rises, and light to meet it.
I need someone to show me my place in all this.
Come on! This is not going to go the way you think.
So before we get into The Last Jedi, I just wanted to start off by saying this. I mean, I still stand by what J.J. Abrams did in The Force Awakens, right? And I know a lot of people have criticized The Force Awakens as being a rehash of Episode 4, like a slicker, more jauntier version of A New Hope. Mm. But I'm a really big fan of that movie. And also, not just because he had that impossible task of kind of renewing a franchise that was literally in the toilet, right? After those first three movies, the prequels, I mean, a lot of people give credit to George Lucas for expanding the world and the universe and all of that stuff. But in my mind, that's completely irrelevant when the storytelling was as piss poor as it was and the acting was so bad.
Roger, roger.
And that's not even talking about Jar Jar Binks. And here's what The Last Jedi did for me. The Last Jedi reinforced what a great movie The Force Awakens was, because J.J. Abrams, this wouldn't exist without that one. J.J. Abrams had the impossible task of rebooting it, making it exciting again, and also bringing it to a new audience, because Star Wars, when I was growing up watching it in those years of the prequels, became a franchise for the hardcore fans, for the people who just would play every video game and read every comic book. And I felt that the average fan was kind of left out of the loop. And these movies, for me, watching The Last Jedi reinforced that it made The Force Awakens a better movie, like how Civil War made Avengers Age of Ultron a better movie. Mm. And it reinforced the notion that Star Wars was for everyone. Mm. I stepped out of the cinema and I told Bahia, I was like, wow, there was a childlike joy watching those X-Wings do those crazy things.
I like what you said about how it opens it up to the casual fan, right? I love the films, but I'm more of a casual fan. I've never read the books. I don't know what's canon, what's not. I just don't have the brain to go into all that.
Or the time. Or the money.
Yeah. I just, you know, yeah.
You mean you don't know the difference between canon and G-canon?
No. Don't go there. We already have to do this during the Star Trek shows. Okay? Not for Star Wars. But no, you're right. These movies make it easy for you to come in without needing to know all the nitty-gritty background, the history, the story, the overly complicated relationships or not relationships. You know, this is a really good film from start to finish. The Force Awakens, it was an impossible task, wasn't it? To just start again. He had to start again. J.J. Abrams had to start again.
And also, he introduced characters that people fell in love with. That's the other hard part of it. It's like, yes, he may have retread A New Hope, but and he leaned on Han Solo and Chewbacca and the other characters. But in Rey and Finn and Dameron Poe, he introduced people that, like, people fell in love with those characters.
Yeah.
And that's not easy.
No, but it's not only that. But halfway through The Force Awakens, you are on board with these guys, right? You're just there. These guys are my friends now.
I can't think of a character from the prequels that I love.
Or care about.
That I care about, that I would want an action figure if I was a kid, right? Yeah. I mean, you don't want everyone at Lucasfilm seemed to be betting that it would be Jar Jar Binks.
Oh, I'm a big fan of that guy in the cantina who tries to sell them death sticks. Way to go with your advertising there, dude.
I don't think he had an action figure. Well, Ian McNally, The Last Jedi, you watched it after us. We caught the press screening, but you were in Hong Kong for a junket. Mm-hmm. You just caught it last night. Tell us your thoughts.
There's something to be... We're going to get it now for the rest of our lives, but there's something to be said for hearing that theme, watching it on a screen, and having no clue what's going to happen. Like, the trailers, again, they've done a fantastic job where everything that you think you might be able to glean about the story from the trailers is out the window instantly, because scenes you thought were from a climactic battle are in the first scene.
Yeah.
And, you know, things that you thought would be like the opening, like, because it looked like it was going to be The Empire Strikes Back. Mm. Those scenes end up later in the movie. And you're just shocked at how things start off. Like, things are not going well for the Rebellion. They're really not going well for the Rebellion.
Yeah, no.
And it's like this small story that's set up to go. And it just, from the instant you're... I mean, I don't know what's going on with Donald Gleeson. There's an element of the humor I'll get into later that is a bit weird for me.
Okay.
But I thought the setup and everything was great of this kind of... They set up this ticking time bomb storyline. And I thought that was very clever. And it's like, we're on the last of the run. But then the niggle started a little bit. I'm still not sure what I think of this. I think it's very interesting for where they're going to go with the series as a whole. Mm. As a reaction to, like, the Force Awakens was... This is to reintroduce it to a new generation. So we're going to take bits of the old stuff and fit it with a turbocharger and add some new characters.
Yeah.
This one then is like, okay... From what I understand, Rian Johnson said he was given no like key points to hit in his script or anything. It's like, all right, just take whatever they've done and do whatever you want.
Right.
And they reshot some scenes from the end of The Force Awakens because he wanted to do some stuff with Luke.
Right.
That wouldn't have worked if what JJ was going to do had been done.
Right.
And you see that very clearly in this one, what he does.
Yeah.
And I felt like a Warner Brothers style course correction that was not necessary. There's mysteries that are set up and there's things that are going on from the first movie that are just dealt with in the most perfunctory way.
Got it. Okay.
And I'm like, it's interesting, but it's also like, what does this mean for the series?
The course correction that you're apprehensive about is something that I quite enjoyed in that it felt like they were almost reprimanding the fans, didn't they? For a moment, because in the sense that this movie feels like the winding up of one generation of Star Wars stories that started with The Force Awakens.
It's not the winding up, it's the burning down.
It's the burning down, right?
No, I'm not going to say I hate the movie or anything like that, but it's just like I really conflicted about what to think about it.
Yeah.
Because the movie is very clear about, like, legends don't help. peace, not war. Like this, this universe has had war for ever, and how to deal with that. I mean, it's a really good message of like we have to figure out a better way to deal with this than just building bigger and bigger spherical death machines and finding weaknesses.
Yeah.
There's got to be a better way to do this, and we're at our lowest ebb now, and we need to be the spark. And that's incredibly interesting. And like at one point, there's like a lot of characters, including another named character, is like they're gone. Like a lot of the characters that you would have from the prequels or that you might look forward, not the prequels, but the originals that you would expect to see around, we're not going to see them ever again. It's they're done.
Yeah.
And it's only, we're not talking big deaths or anything, these aren't spoilers.
Yeah.
But it's like, that feels like, screw the fans, this is where we should be going.
Correct.
And I just felt that having so many of them felt kind of odd. And there's a ticking time bomb at the beginning of this, and it's a little bit of what happened with Star Trek with warp drive becoming instantaneous. You know, to get from Earth to Vulcan in the first Star Trek movie is literally just like engines on, engines off, we're there.
Right.
There's no travel time, and it's the Empire Strikes Back, how long was Luke training problem.
Yeah.
In that they introduce a ticking clock. Everybody is in peril. There's no escape. If we jump out of here, we're going to be followed. If we try to do anything else, we're screwed. We're running low on fuel. What are we going to do?
Mm.
And then two people get in the ship and they go ahead and they pop off and have an adventure for 18 hours. It's like, why didn't everyone get on that ship?
Mm.
And I felt that was like supremely lazy writing. It really annoyed me that like it's, if you think about, you know, two boats having a chase in the Atlantic and a smaller boat gets out of the front boat and goes ahead to the US and then pops back again to answer, to get more fuel or something like that. It's like, it causes more problems story-wise than it resolves. And actually, that adventure then ended up being kind of pointless.
So, yeah, I completely agree with you.
So
like,
for
that
me,
one, yeah,
that was that the weakest adventure. Point in the film. Yeah. The weakest point in the film, I wrote this in my notes, it's a bit draggy in the middle, and Benicio del Toro's character doesn't get much to do because the Finn and Rose storyline feels a little, like it doesn't necessarily go anywhere.
Yeah.
It falls short.
And in a way, I think that ties into what we're saying about what they're doing for the fan, what they're doing for the franchise, because it's not supposed to go anywhere. There's a lesson here to be learned for that new generation from the older generation, and including, this is now including Laura Dern's character, General Holdo. It's like, they know how to be heroes, but they don't know how to be leaders.
Mm.
I think Princess Leia says that at one point.
Which is the message of this
which
movie,
which is
right?
the message of this movie. How do you pass? It's not just, you can pass on the baton, but you need to know what to do with that baton, and that's a different thing, and that's a different style. And that's a good message, and I think the amount of diversity on display here is fantastic. You're seeing actors from all over the place pop up all over the place. I just felt that the story could have been a little bit tighter.
Yeah.
And then when you add into that, some elements of the humor really didn't land for me.
So I thought this movie was almost a little too funny for a Star Wars movie, or trying to be a little too funny. I mean, it isn't Taika Waititi. In the sense that Rian Johnson didn't recreate the franchise in his own image. However, that being said, he did infuse some interesting one-liners that felt a little out of place. I mean, I laughed.
Yeah.
I thought the timing was good for all of them. It just
didn't feel like Star Wars.
It didn't feel like Star Wars.
There's a joke involving the introduction of the Porgs and Chewbacca. That's super dark, considering how cute and everything the Porgs are and how much they come to be part of the movie. And it's like, what? The thing with the joke is you can see the little legs and everything. It's kind of creepy. They set up these things as super cute, and then they have this element of darkness around them. And like, I mean, but it also gives the actor who does Chewbacca some fantastic eye acting.
It does.
His eyes are amazing. Best eyes 2017. He's just like, the way he's glancing around and stuff.
Yeah.
I mean, his eye acting is only met by the, only matched by the lip trembling of the Porgs.
Yes.
Yeah.
I'm a huge fan of how they are planning to reboot this franchise, or at least
once the Skywalker series is done.
Correct, right? I mean, and this is a movie that's a great little setup for that. I mean, the message that all of these characters, and this is a spoiler, you hear it in the trailers, is to kill the past, forget the past, let it go, right? Let it go is such a strong message that's running throughout this film.
Yeah, it's a great song as well.
It's a great song as well.
It's also like, that's one side, but the other side is like, learn from it. Don't let it go. Don't burn it out.
Yes.
It's like, you know, you can't expect someone to swagger up with a laser sword and save all your problems.
Yeah.
You have to deal with them yourselves, but also it's getting away from, and I mean, it's a great lesson. I think it would be talked about a lot on the Slash Film podcast, which Rian Johnson was on quite a lot, because when he was working on Breaking Bad, he would just dial in and troll them a lot. And they would talk a lot about, like, you know, when they introduced midichlorians and all this stuff in the prequels, the joy of the original Star Wars was anyone could be that fanboy.
Correct.
And prequels introduce this idea of predestination and of midichlorians, of like virgin birth and all this kind of stuff. It's like, oh, it's destined hero, and destined hero is always more boring.
It is.
And this is introducing now that anyone can be the hero yet again. And not only anyone can be the Jedi hero, anyone can be any hero, because we need all types of heroes to make a rebellion work.
Correct. And also what Rian Johnson does really, really well in this film is by kind of echoing Empire, but subverting all of your expectations
kind of reversed,
how
right?
it'll play out. Exactly, right? I mean, because he doesn't give you nostalgia. He doesn't indulge in nostalgia, and he uses sufficient twists and turns to keep it fresh while using that template, something which J.J. Abrams was criticized for in The Force Awakens. Oh, look, another Death Star. But also, you know, for all of those people who were kind of lamenting and even resenting the fact that Star Wars has kind of re-echoed itself, old tropes, over and over again, and not just in the 7 movies before, or 8 movies before if you include Rogue One, but also in every single novel and video game. It's Jedi, it's Sith, it's even in the Old Republic stories. I mean, it is a rehash over and over again.
Because who doesn't want to run around with a laser sword?
Correct. But it feels like Rian Johnson is making a solid effort to move that forward.
Yes.
And that I appreciated a lot.
And I think, for me, I think, like, I haven't said a lot just because I think...
I won't shut up.
No, but it's just that I agree with both of you, but at the same time, a lot of people listening to this were going to say, like, Ian didn't like this, right?
No, I'm super conflicted about it.
Yeah, but to me, I left there going, I really want a lightsaber now.
Mm.
You know,
once again,
right? And I think The Force Awakens didn't leave me with that as much. It was a great beginning. You know, you see all the characters.
After that, I wanted to go full Sith. I was like, you got a cool hat and like, awesome sword.
Like a really great robe. Right? Yeah. But in this one, I wanted to be on the side of the Force again. I wanted to be with the rebellion. I wanted to be that kid again. And that was really great. And I think the setup of these new characters, once the Star Wars storylines no longer have to worry about the Skywalker lineage, I guess.
Mm-hmm.
I think, personally, I am looking forward to that. That hopefully the trip between, that journey that Rey will take, that John Boyega's character will take, that Oscar Isaac's character will take.
And what's the 3 H's that Luke says about the Jedi? There's like hubris, something else. There's like 3... If the prequels taught us anything about the Jedi, it's that they were just so up themselves, they didn't see problems
coming.
They
were real jerks.
They were real jerks.
Yeah.
And they, space jerky priests, and they just didn't, you know, they were so blinded by their own hubris, they didn't see the troubles coming, and they trained the Sith Lord that, you know, destroyed them all. And then they failed him at every single way.
Yeah.
And I think that's a problem that always comes up in Jedi stories.
With all of this stuff happening, with trying to resolve the Luke story and the Leia story and what's happening with Oscar Isaac and Finn and Rose and all of that stuff, it is still a really thrilling Star Wars adventure. It doesn't lose sight of that at all. I mean, the opening battle sequence is absolutely intense. And also, man, some of the framing of those shots were absolutely stunning.
Yes. Mm.
There were these moments which were breathtaking. You want them as a still on your wall.
Yeah.
Yeah, there's a moment which is going to be like GIF of the year near the end. It's got a red background and people fighting with laser swords again.
Yeah.
I'm just keep calling them laser swords because I think that's funny. Because it's actually said in the movie.
That's
I thought
true.
That was hilarious.
Yeah. You now have an excuse.
Because for so long, lightsaber has been a Lucasfilm trademark.
Yeah.
So now they're trying to take over laser sword as well. But there's a fight scene with two people fighting in red in the background and stuff. And it's just like, it's like the Matrix. It's like the stairwell fight or something like that.
Yeah, yeah. And like it starts off with a little bit of slow-mo, right? And then it sort of just ramps up.
And every time anyone comes out of light speed, they've come up with new ways to make that look. It's not like you're in the cockpit and you see the star lines go to stars again. It's like you're with the ship in light speed and you see the world come into being around it.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
And it's just like, that's badass.
There's that one shot of, it's like, it's a shot of outside the ship, like the cameras on the side of the ship. It's like you've seen that in like car chasers and stuff, but to see it on a ship is amazing.
And even after the opening crawl, when the camera kind of pans down into the ship and the way everything whooshes past, it is a fantastic experience. But no, some of these shots are like absolute paintings. They're absolutely gorgeous. I love them.
There was a moment of silence, which is absolutely stunning.
Oh, just
incredible.
Like
at that, I thought, has the sound gone out? Because it's just this amazing moment, and then you're waiting.
Yeah.
for the thunder.
And it doesn't happen immediately.
No, it doesn't. No. It takes a while.
It takes a while.
Also, doesn't use the Star Wars ring effect explosion. Thankfully, it just has some. It just has a very big bang.
That was really cool.
It was incredibly cool. I don't know why they don't do that more often. It's like, hey, we never thought of this before.
But also, as it happens, and this is, I mean, this just reinforces the joy of cinema, right? Literally, everyone in the hall I was at just goes, "Ooh!" And you hear this audible gasp.
There was just an intake of breath of mine. It's like,
yeah. That, I think for us, it was mostly that as well. Yeah.
There were multiple moments.
Yeah.
Hero moments, shocking moments in our cinema when people lost it. They were gasping. They were laughing. They were shocked. And that made the experience phenomenal.
Yeah, it was great. To go back to the technical, and I need to ask you this because you saw it in a different screening to us. It looked like film. Was it just me? Like the opening crawl didn't look like a sharp, tight digital font. I think
they try to maintain the look with the original.
Yeah, and
slightly.
I really like that it doesn't look like this new version. It looks like if you play this next to episode 4, episode 6, it looks like
it fits.
Yeah, you can sort of gauge that. It looks digital. It looks organic.
One thing we haven't spoken about, I mean, we're not doing any spoilers on this podcast. We'll get to that at a later date when enough people have had time to watch this. But we haven't spoken about any of the performances. And I have to say, I think Daisy Ridley is absolutely stunning.
Mm. And I've never seen anyone go for a swim and then come back with a new haircut.
Correct.
and a new wardrobe. I mean, that was a bit weird.
That is the power of the Force.
Yes.
And Mark Hamill has really upped his acting game.
Oh, yeah. I mean,
he's a delight to watch in this.
Having heard him on so many different podcasts and talking about his time on Batman and his time on the original Star Wars films, and he's a massive fanboy and he gets carried away and he's a raconteur, and like I've heard him tell the same stories over and over again but change them different ways, and he gets carried away himself. Like he'll just keep talking and the interviewer doesn't get a chance to get a word in edgewise.
Right.
And it was really good to see him play Luke.
Yeah.
Not play Mark Hamill again.
No.
Because these days he seems to get hired to play Mark Hamill or the Joker. He doesn't get to play someone who is this full range of emotions.
I will say though that when he first appears on screen and his first couple of lines of dialogue, in my head I heard the Joker.
Really?
You know, it was just because his voice is raspy now. It's, you know, it's aged. I've known Mark Hamill, Luke Skywalker from 4, 5, 6 when, mm-hmm. you know, he was young, sprightly. And Mark Hamill after that has been the Joker from Batman or
the trickster,
or
from,
the
Flash.
Trickster from The Flash. Yeah. Right? And now when he first starts speaking, it was just like, a little too jokery for me.
Really?
But then I forget. Soon after, when he gets into it, it really works out.
And he plays this character so well because he plays... I was watching this and I'm like, wow, you are playing this character with... On one hand, you have the same wide-eyed wonder as Luke did in episode 4, and then at the same time you have all of that darkness and regret that Obi-Wan and Yoda have for somehow failing the Jedi. You have encompassed all three of these characters in yourself, and you've never kind of forgiven yourself.
Yeah,
there's a point where he's literally back to the wide-eyed, there's a fire involved, he's literally back to the wide-eyed fanboy just having a chat.
Yeah.
And that is, he goes from that to the same Luke Skywalker who was threatening Jabba the Hutt at the end of beginning of Return of the Jedi. He's like, no, I am a master. You know what I mean? Yeah. He goes between all those roles, and then every time he turns, there seems to be a tear in his eye.
But he also does that flip between tired Ben Kenobi.
Yes.
And also just
young,
like
young Skywalker.
I've lost my mind Luke's lost his mind on this island as Yoda's lost his mind in that swamp in Dagobah. You know, he does that very well.
He doesn't start giggling and, you know.
He doesn't do that, although he does some really weird stuff when he's there.
There's one moment that edges into something else that kind of bugged me a little bit, and that certain elements start to feel fan servicey. Do you know what I mean? But there's a moment she has with Laura Dern later on where they're just saying
which
a phrase
is amazing.
To each other, which is just, that's brilliant. And some of the banter with Dameron Poe is... like just jump in an X-Wing and blow something up. That whole back and forth they have around that is genius. And it's just, it says at the end of the credits, I think, you know, for our princess, Carrie Fisher, a living memory of our princess. I'm terrified about how they're going to manage.
For what Disney has been doing with all of their franchises so far, it feels like they're on the right track in making these very deliberate, well thought out efforts for their franchises. It doesn't feel half-baked. It feels like they have a clear direction and an idea. It also reinforces the fact, in my mind at least, that none of these movies can be judged by themselves as films. And I, as a critic, I have no idea if that's a good thing or a bad thing. So far, I think it's a good thing because I'm enjoying them and I'm enjoying the process because it's changing the way I have to think about movies. And that's quite refreshing as well. It's changing the way I have to think about and review movies as well. But I think The Last Jedi is a movie that's on the right path, and it's made me look forward to episode 9, whatever that might be. And also,
I have no idea what Rian Johnson's going to do with his three movies. It's like,
I don't.
It's wide open now. It's it was wide open before, but now I've seen what he does when he has the toy box. Getting to build his own toy box is just
going to be insane.
The mind boggles.
Yeah. And also, for me, there is a closing minute and a half of this film. I think the emotional resonance for that was amazing for me. That was what filled me with that sense of childlike wonder. And I was like, yep, I'm back being a kid again, watching Empire Strikes Back.
Yeah, you want to leave. The best way I can say is you want to leave and go to the closest toy store. You know what I mean? Like, because you
which is exactly what they want you to do.
I know. Yeah. And like,
weak-minded fool.
Totally. I think that's been established.
You will go shopping today.
Yeah. And but is that the thing of wanting to be a part?
I don't need a toy. All I need is a broom from the closet.
Yes.
Oh, okay.
That. I mean,
but you know that's not what you're going to go. No. That's not what you're going
to
do.
I mean, in a way, this is the perfect poem or love letter to the Star Wars kid from the 90s. Yeah. That kid in the basement with his broom that was mocked up and derided from.
Yeah.
This brings it all back to that. And that part of it is beautiful. I'm like, you know, rebellions aren't built on weapons and all this other kind of stuff. They're built on hope and how you get those messages across and the legends that grow around them. I just thought that element of it was amazing. And actually, because they never really dealt with that in the past. They talk about the Jedi or this ancient religion or whatever, and you know, they don't really go into the fact that like these were gods who walked among us.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
And they're great stories. And Ben Kenobi's like, it was a time, you know, but like it was over with.
Yeah.
This is like, these are heroes of, these are their myths and legends, and only they're still real. And what they can do about what those legends teach you to do about your life right now is the important thing.
Star Wars The Last Jedi is now in cinemas. We know you're going to watch it, most likely more than once. And when you do, you can tweet us and tell us all about it. I'm on at Umar Pagan.
I'm on at McNasty Prime.
I'm at Bahe White.
This is At The Movies on BFM 89.9.
Thank you for listening to this podcast. To find more great interviews, go to bfm.my or find us on iTunes. BFM 89.9, the business station.
Quit eating your burgers off a coffee table. If you want to eat a burger, put it on a bar. Follow your instincts to B-Dubs for the new All-American Cheeseburger. Fresh, juicy beef smashed till it's crispy around the edges, covered in gooey cheese, and stacked to the ceiling with deliciousness. And knock that baby down with a frosted beer at the bar. Just like the sports gods intended. The new All-American Cheeseburger at Buffalo Wild Wings. Roar! Please drink responsibly.